Hello everyone, welcome to Alles Blau, episode 11. My name is Caroline Palla and this is my podcast. With me today is Daniela Palimariu, the third resident artist at Esther Epstein's Messer Salon Embassy Zurich North in Oerlikon. When she's not an artist in residence, Daniela is based in Bucharest, Romania. But as we're going to learn later in the talk, she's originally from Iași, in the northeast of Romania, bordering Moldova. So Iași is the city where it all began for Daniela, and this is also the starting point of her talk. So let's jump right into episode 11 of Alles Blau podcast with Daniela Palimariu. Enjoy. So you were born in 1986?
Yes.
And your parents, I mean, I'm just assuming because I don't know anything about your family background, and I would love it if you're open to talk about it, but just like doing the math, your parents were about your age now when they had to adjust to the transition from the socialist regime to the republic that Romania is now?
Yes.
So how has that informed your childhood?
Well, obviously I don't remember anything from before the revolution. I was only three. And I just know the 90s was also a really dark time. So I think they, for them, it was great and liberating. First, that they had access to records. I know my father was really fond of music, and you know, and he could have all the records and all the books. And for them, that was the most important part. It wasn't the lack of food and electricity and all that, but the information and the access to information. So I think for them it was a big breakthrough. But still, the 90s, which I remember as my childhood, was a crazy dark time. And so,
do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have an older sister, 3 years older, so maybe she remembers a bit more. But we are almost kind of the same generation. And I didn't really understand that now there is something different than before. So really, I just kind of went with it, and I always hoped it's gonna be better for me when I am older and when I have children. But it was always, even if it was all these dark times, and here I mean more about money and, you know, these material things. My parents, because they are teachers and they went to university for philosophy and psychology, and they always encouraged us to develop this side of our humanistic abilities. And we always went to the theater as much as we could, philharmonics, and with my mother to concerts. And they always tried to, you know, with the little resources that they had to expose us, yes. And I remember I was going with my mother to the contemporary dance festival, even in the 90s, that was starting then. And I was maybe 10 or at most. And obviously, I wanted to be a dancer, a contemporary dancer for a long time.
Because
it was every year, so it was our thing, you know, and we were doing that, and I was so decided to do it and to go to dance school for high school. And then they convinced me actually not to, and I thought I'll be a ballerina, or, you know, start from ballet and see afterwards. And they convinced me that it's not the way for me, because I have to develop my brain also, and if you're a dancer, you can't do that also. Or there was something about that. And okay, so I didn't become a dancer.
Did you train as a dancer?
No. Mm-hmm. So I never got to that point. Then I grew. And then, but it was always something, you know, to expression, to this. And then with my mother, we were doing these little games every week. to make a little arrangement in the there was a place in the living room where we would make a little arrangement, which maybe we would call now an installation, but really smaller, you know, with objects that we would find around and give a title. And so she didn't have arts training, but she had this intuition about it. And she had an intuition about me specifically, that I would be able to, you know, express myself. And yeah, we were writing poems. Since, you know, since I was in primary school, I was writing these, you know, childish and naive, but poems. So I was always doing something to express, I didn't know what, but I knew there has to be something profound to say.
So when you finished school, it was kind of obvious for you that you wanted to go to the field of the arts.
Yes, but I had no idea that there is such a thing as a profession of artist. I knew you can be an illustrator or a designer or something as
applied
art. Exactly. I knew about the applied arts. So because we only knew about that, we knew somebody who was in the design department. And before my last year of high school, we decided to prepare for the exam and go into the design. And design at first is for everything, and then you choose if it's graphic or object or something else. And we said, okay, let's do this effort for 1 year to learn how to draw. And I know my father paid so much to have every week this 6-hour private lessons to start from zero and to learn how to make an industrial design drawing, sketch, and to understand shapes and volumes and all that. So I got, I was the second one on the list of the entries to enter in the design department. So it was like a success for everybody and a great moment. But then I wanted to say that after all this great triumph, university started in autumn, and it was nothing like I hoped for. It was a complete disappointment, and nothing was happening really. It wasn't organized. My colleagues weren't motivated to do things. They just wanted to, everybody went for coffee every day after 1 or 2 hours, and it was just this mess. I can't even describe it because I try to forget this year. So the first year was just dramatic because I worked so hard to get there, and then nothing was happening. Everyone was blasé.
So no teachers, no inspiration, no inspirational figures.
And I had no idea where to. I needed some guidance, of course.
Yeah.
But then I discovered there is this thing called the photography department, which was obviously the closest one to contemporary art. And then I understood that you can be just artist and it doesn't have to be applied to something. But there was this biennial of contemporary art in Iași, Periferic, and it was the first one in Romania. And then I started to be a bit, you know, slowly to get a bit into this area.
So who organized something like a biennial? Was that other artists or was it the state? Or
it was an artist who was also the main teacher in the photography department. He actually made the photography department be independent, Matei Bejenaru. He's an important figure in Romania and especially for Iași. And he, with his friends, when they were in their 30s, they saw that some things like this were happening in other countries, and they started with a performance festival every year. And then it became an art biennial. And they did it for, I think, more than 10 years.
And did it attract people from all over the country?
Yes.
Or was it mainly for Iași?
No, actually, it attracted people from other countries. That was foreigners.
Also, it was an international.
It was an international, and then it grew, of course, every edition. They got curators from, some international curators to bring, and then, of course, they got some money from the city, but it was always quite limited. But I think for the people in Iași, maybe it wasn't so important or so visible. Maybe it was too early for it to happen there.
So do you remember any photographers that kind of stuck in your mind, or works that were particularly attractive to you?
I remember when I was in those few years in the photography department, I had this crush on the portraits of Rinneke Dijkstra. I still don't know how to say it. And
I think it's Dijkstra. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I discovered Wolfgang Tillmans, and I was so, you know, I just couldn't tell what it is about this with these photos of daily life and clothes on the floor that is so special and so great. So that was my direction also, to take photos of common things and to discover what is happening in this domestic sphere and just in my apartment and with food. And then there was this attraction to food and everything, yeah, got mixed. But this was 1 year in the photography department. And then, because every year in college was really different. And in the third year, I got a scholarship to go to the U.S. in Wisconsin, you know, in a city called...
Was that a scholarship you were suggested to, or did you apply for it?
I applied mm-hmm. for it, and I couldn't believe I got it, because mm-hmm. this was this amazing thing. You had a year there, you had everything paid, of course. Anyway, amazing. You know, I was 21, 22... So 1 year in Eau Claire in the photography department, and that was a big step. So I made a lot of progress.
So Eau Claire
there.
Is that also a university city? Is
it? Well, it's a small city, and they have the university. It's University of Wisconsin Eau Claire.
Yeah,
and it's so small, but they have a big campus, and they had. So it was one of these general universities, not for art, but they had a good art department. It was really definitory. You know, really helped me make a lot of progress and understand that art can be in so many ways, because in Yash, as important as this art from peripheric, from the biennial was, it was a certain kind of. It was conceptual and with the social and political implications, and I wasn't really attracted to that. I tried to be, but I always knew there's something that I'm not. It's not for me, or I don't have it in me. You know, I like colors. And when I was in Wisconsin, I realized you can do other types of things too, a lot more personal and a lot more. You know, you don't have to have big statements and change the world immediately. So it, even if it was just 1 year, it was amazing. I could work in the dark room for a semester. There was nobody else working there, so I could use all this equipment and all this space. I thought it's amazing, because at home, of course, we always had to fight for the. It was, you know, much less resources and more people to share them, and. Yeah, anyway, the whole experience, I was in America, we went to New York in the spring break to visit all the museums and the galleries there. I went to San Francisco. It was just, obviously, you know, you're 21, like, big discovery.
Excellent.
It was amazing.
And did you live on campus?
And yes. It was really the American experience, I think, because it was a campus and the people there looked like you would see them in a movie in campus, and the houses and the mailboxes looked like, and the lawns, it looked like in a movie. So Midwest maybe is the best place to start in America, because it's really what they also call, you know, the true, you know, basic America, not East Coast or West Coast.
Yeah.
And I had a few really important teachers there, and I got so close to them in just 1 year, you know, and I was also maybe a bit different than the others, just because I was from outside and from Europe. And it really, this is the idea that it opened up the possibilities. So when I came back, and then I came back for another year in Yash, I had to finish the diploma. Of course, my former colleagues had already graduated, and it was a new group, and they were so unmotivated, they were missing classes. It was again the same kind of atmosphere, you know? And I was coming back from that heaven of, for me it was a heaven, because everybody wanted to work, everybody wanted to do things, and that was my style, you know. I love working. I love being in the thing there. But this time I had the experience to concentrate on my own work and to not be affected so much by this. So, and I brought all these new ideas with me, and already, you know, people started to see that there's a bit something, maybe something a bit different than in the way I do things. You know, I was playing with Haribo bears and doing animations with gummy things and all these colors. And yeah, that was an interesting year also. And I finished the diploma with images from domestic. It was just called domestic, and just images from houses of people.
Photographs, yes.
Of you know, personal corners.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think living as a person with a strong drive mm-hmm. is obviously a big asset, mm-hmm. but it also sets you apart. And how do you deal with this, or how do you manage?
These were the most difficult times in my life, when I wanted to do things and I wasn't still able yet to do them on my own, and I needed a group, an entourage, more than an entourage, a team. And this is what I have now. So this is really now the best time. And it took so long and so much work to do, but now I have this team, and they also want to do things. And
so your allies.
My allies, yeah. So we're building something together, and they're not afraid to work, you know, as long as it takes, and nobody takes a break or for so much time. We had no weekend, but I think this is common actually for all the artists. But and also when I started Salon Video with my friend in Bucharest, we discovered that we can do this, and this feeling that I had when I was building something and didn't care, you know, if I had no more energy, or if I, you know, I wasn't tired at all. I can't compare it to anything.
So when I read on your CV about Salon Video, I was wondering, was it also an online platform, or was it a wandering exhibition platform, or what yeah. type of platform was it?
I planned it from the beginning, every time it was an exhibition in a space, so not online, that you could visit in a different art space that were partners in this. So, but first I did it for 2 days, and then I realized it's so stupid. You work so much to install these things, and it works for 2 days. No way. And then, you know, with every edition, I call them editions, with every edition, it grew more.
Did you feel that video art was particularly underrepresented in Bucharest?
Yes. That is another thing and another motivation. And it was also coinciding with the time when I stopped making videos myself, video art myself. On a personal level, I took a break from it, but I wanted to show what others are doing. So that was working great, because I wasn't thinking of my own work. I think I was more objective, and I always collaborated with another curator or another somebody else also. So I was more the organizer in the end. And I was thinking also it would be great to become also an online archive, and to develop and to be like a really relevant platform that you would go to find, if you want to find out about Romanian video art, you go there.
Yeah, to create like a digital archive.
Yes, and it would and to become very relevant. But at some point, something also kind of, let's say, finished in my motivation with it. And also one of my most important collaborators started to do some other things. And so at some point we reached the point, and then it didn't. And then I found some other things, some other interests also. But I would, who knows, maybe I will continue it at some point. But it has to be the right collaborator, the right team. And I can't do things now just on my own, maybe like so big. I don't want to do them anymore like this. I want to find the right person or persons to build something with. And if it's not the right time now, it's okay. It will be.
Was Salon Video, was that after your diploma in Yash, or was it after the master's?
After the master's, so when I came back to Bucharest.
Let's regress.
Okay.
So you made your diploma in Yash.
And then I applied to the best art programs, the RCA, you know, the Royal College in London, the Goldsmiths in London, something else in London. And I only sent it to the best ones, and they didn't take me because I wasn't in the right moment for that.
But your English was really good.
Yeah,
already.
But for them, you know.
It's, yeah, it's not all about that. But I mean, it's they needed. It's a plus.
Yes, that was always a good thing, and of course, my year in America was helpful. So I said I was already a bit more mature, so to not freak out if I didn't have a plan for that year. And I said, okay, I'll just be 1 year to develop a few more works to have a stronger portfolio. And I found some job in an organization there, but I was living with my parents. There was nothing tragic about being at home for 1 year, you know, not going directly to the master's just so that I can say I'm doing a master's.
Yeah.
I had no intention to do one in my city or anywhere else in Romania. I knew I want to be out and make this big step.
So you're cool.
So I was cool, exactly. I was cool about it. And I had, I had a photography exhibition through some program there. And I was so happy about it that year. And then I applied again. That year again to all the places in London, but this time I also applied to a place in Falmouth where I actually went because they accepted me.
How and did you find out about them?
Because they used to have an exchange program with our university. And there was another program that accepted me in Netherlands. I already forgot, and I had to choose, and I went to this one because it was more directed. It was I needed some teachers and some meetings and a program and a schedule and something like this, more like school.
Yeah, and when you started your master's, did you already kind of go into it with a plan, or did you start out and develop something new on the spot?
Well, I went there with a very clear plan. I knew exactly what I wanted to do for the whole year because I was finally in the place where I wanted to. And of course, I did something else in the end. And and I developed on the spot something I would have never thought. So I went with this plan to do photography and video. And this was my big love, big plan. They had a darkroom for color photography. So I spent the first semester there doing these experiments with the chemicals, and I was amazed. And then I started taking photos of food and or people eating food, or I don't know, all this about food. But it was kind of going nowhere because I also realized I'm not such a good photographer. maybe I am now. And I started to organize events where people would eat, not just to document something that already existed. And when I had this first superstition lunch party with all the food was color-coded, there was a list of superstitions that you had to take care of when you were eating, all these games.
Like what?
Like if you drop salt on the table, there's a problem. I forgot which one. And then I made some up, and some were good. So if the last drop of the wine is in your glass, so you get the last one, then you get the attention from your opposing.
Oh, that's
attracting.
Spooky.
Well, maybe you want the attention, or you know, all these things, and people were laughing, and it was a link to connect them, and it was for 12 people.
So how did you come up with the idea? You were saying that your food photography didn't go anywhere, or
yes,
and then but then there's still a step.
Yes, there was a step, and I think it helped a lot that we had discussions there and with groups. It's even possible that somebody suggested something like this, and I just made it together and made it happen like this. And I think, yeah, I think some of the teachers had an important role here to give me the right references and to realize that an event like this could be also a work of art and a very important one. And then everything, and then I it's like exploded. You know, I really loved arranging this table and making some like a weird design. Some things you could eat, some things not. It was only white, red, and green. And then there was also some white, red, and green on the wall behind them. But it wasn't really clear what the connection it was. Maybe it was like a explanation, but. I started to discover this ambiguity that I am keeping also now, that you can leave people wondering and not explain things, not make them very clear or make them contradicting maybe, and
be playful
and be playful, definitely, and a lot more playful and a lot more alive. And people had a really good time there, and we had some great photos. and then again, you know, young mind, I thought, okay, this is it. You know, I'm going to do these kind of things. So I was also, again, trying to find something that I can put my hands on and say, this is mine. This is my thing now. I'm doing dinners. I'm doing breakfast. I'm doing food stuff.
Did you research other artists who worked with... like dinner settings?
Yes, I had a whole thing of them and the implications of food and what it means, and you know, I thought also this is a thing for a long time, and I got stuck. Again, I got kind of stuck in this. I don't remember where, but. And then I started also to build the space in which people were eating. So I said, okay, we can sit at a table on chairs, but maybe we don't have to. Maybe I can build something that looks like a kind of a boat, and people sit on the floor and they just lean their backs on it, and the food is between them on the floor, basically, and they have to share from one space to another. This was called a dinner in the love boat for 10 people. And then I realized again that, okay, people are eating, they have a connection with each other, they know each other, it's good, but it's not enough. I don't feel satisfied with this. I have the photos afterwards, but I don't want to take photos of people eating. I want to leave them alone to enjoy it. But then at the end, I don't have anything...
No documents
and nothing to say, this is what I did, this is my, and to feel good about it. Okay, so then I had to expand a bit more, and really the last project was called The Platform. And it wasn't necessarily to be there to eat, but you could also do that. But you could also sleep, you could also read. So it was... really a platform that was elevated kind of 40 centimeters from the ground, quite large, maybe 5 meters by 8, so you could walk on it. And it had some holes with some very specific geometric shapes in them, holes that were going, you know, down, on laying on the ground. So you had this cavity of 40 centimeters high where you could lay down and feel surrounded by this wood, this wood material. So it was really a big step again to discover that I'm not a designer.
So you step into the hole and you lay on the floor, and then you get air through.
Yes,
the hole.
But the floor is also the same material as the
platform.
Yes, the MDF. It was MDF, so it had all the same color. So you don't go on the actual floor, but it's just at the same level as the floor. But it's like you're surrounded in three ways by this material, and it is a shape, an organic shape, like a cocoon shape maybe, or something.
Or a womb.
Or something mm-hmm. like this, but kind of controlled. So mm-hmm. it was nothing too random. One of the things I organized there was nap stations. So I put posters in the campus that you could come and take a nap at when you want. Everybody was working for their diploma, so everybody was a bit tired in the afternoon, and they actually took some great naps there. There were blankets, there were things to cover your eyes and earplugs, and you could actually not just pretend. It's this kind of participation, but you could actually use it for a nap. And people said they felt great because they felt surrounded by this, and it smelled of this wood thing, and they enjoyed it. And then I discovered this other thing, that I want to do works where you can actually do the thing, not pretend to do the thing. And I always wonder if this works with everything I do. And I was saying that I was a bit disappointed at the end because, you know, it wasn't so appreciated, and then the program ended and everything kind of finished a bit, you know, like, not in a triumph.
But you got your master's degree.
Yes, but back then, you know, I thought it was important for me actually for that moment to get an appreciation and to, you know, to be one of the
honorable mention,
something, anything, and nothing.
So was there in that British university, was there any artistic tendencies that were being followed, or did you think that you kind of fall out of the roster, or was there what were your peers doing?
Yeah, I think I didn't really fit because it wasn't so much art. They consider it a bit outside, like you said, a bit towards design and architecture. And yeah, I mean, there were different things that people were doing. There was a lot of painting also, but I wouldn't say this was...
There wasn't like one particular tendency. Okay.
No. But I realized afterwards that they saw this as a more towards design, and it didn't have enough art quality, because even the way it looked, it's so, you know, the edges are sharp, the shapes are really clear, and I mean, of course, this is really part of art as well, but I think there was at some point there was a limit to what I could explain or what could go, what could be, understood back then. Maybe it just didn't make sense with my other works, and that's what the problem was. Maybe I didn't take it far enough. I don't know.
Well, I mean, school is also a place where to test things.
Yes. And obviously now I don't think of the grade anymore. And I know it was such a good work, and actually... I'm jumping ahead of time now, but next month I am doing a section of the platform in a group show in Bucharest, and I'm actually specifically the nap stations for people to nap in. So, and it's, I'm changing the shapes now, but it's the same thing, and I'm glad I am not, you know, embarrassed with this work I did 8 years ago. I still can come back to it. Yeah. and do it, and it's still important.
Yeah. And the allies earlier on, you were speaking about how now you found allies who were mm-hmm. just as motivated as you. So that's your peers at Sandwich Gallery?
Yes.
So that's an art space outside of Bucharest that you started 2 years ago?
2 years ago, yes. Soon it will be 2 years ago, but 1 year before we were already planning and preparing, and it took a long time to... you know, prepare the space, renovate it a bit with our own resources. And
the thing you were talking about at the Messer Solon Embassy, Zurich North, at the talk that you had last week, I thought it was interesting that the building actually belonged to the Artists' Union.
Yes, the whole complex where we are belongs to the Artists' Union, and it used to be a factory for color, pigments, paints, acrylics for artists that were distributed in the whole country. So it was a huge thing. They had a printing thing also, and now they are still producing some things, but maybe at 10% capacity.
But still on site. They just don't use all their space anymore.
Yes, mm-hmm. because obviously... But all these spaces are rented to whomever. There were some car repairing shops, just anything. And we, my colleagues got their studios there, and then we saw this space which is between two storage units, and we didn't want to make a space, and then found this one and decided to do it. It was the other way around. One of us actually saw it and kept thinking about it, and we all had the same image in mind, to call it Sandwich and just see what we can do in this really weird 1 meter and a half narrow and 8 meters long.
Yeah, and this corridor space. That is sandwiched.
It's kind of corridor, and but it's not really, because in the back it's closed. You can't go anywhere. So it was a dead residual space with garbage. We cleaned it up, and the first work was one of our team members. And we just said, let's see who shows up and what happens. And actually at the first opening, there were some... Also, some other events in the city, and some curators or some foreign people were there, and somehow they came there to us because they were curious. And actually, we had a really good crowd at the beginning, and some, you know, the images to show that people came, and this, so it's actually, you know, it's kind of works. And then we continued.
When you were in the UK, did you visit art spaces, like small art spaces, that, or where did the inspiration come from to found an independent art space?
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't really make a connection with the things I saw before. When I was in the UK, I was really keen on doing these video exhibitions, but I had no plans to have a space on my own. I thought this is too much, this is way, way out of... And then actually Sandwich happened after I was already for 4 or 5 years in Bucharest and kept changing interest and maybe groups and friends. So it took a long time to get to this, and it wasn't planned like this. Actually, for the first year, I was really fighting this idea a bit that I'm working in this space and I want to do my own work, and how is this working? It didn't really click in my mind at the beginning, because you know how long it takes to organize things, and I was feeling that it takes away from my own art practice. But in the same time, in my own art practice, a lot of times I had no idea what to do anyway, so then it went back and forth. Now it works. Now it clicked.
2016, you were a resident artist in Bern, in the city of Bern. And I was wondering how that came about.
That was a really nice opportunity that I almost said no to, because I was so keen on being there at Sandwich and giving all my everything to it, that I almost said I'm not going anywhere. And actually I was lucky because one of my friend and peer artists, Raluca Popa, was invited, and she had the opportunity to just invite one more artist, and she invited me. So that was great, because after all the applications for residencies that I didn't get, all of a sudden I was just invited to one in Bern. I didn't know anything about art in Switzerland or art spaces, and it was great because it was 1 month, so quite limited time, but we knew this from the beginning, and I think I did a lot of things there. We did a little show in the botanical garden, in the orangerie. It was just a perfect break from all this organizational thing that I was talking.
Was that your first visit to Switzerland?
Yes, and I had no kind of special interest in it. I was thinking, you know, it's where the money is and that's it. But that was obviously an opening. And then Manifesta was here in the same year in Zurich, of course. And of course, we came to visit it. And, you know, slowly I was thinking, wow, you know, it's so, I could be here for longer. So.
And why did your friend apply to this particular residency? Had she heard about it?
Well, she was more involved in the, let's say, in the Swiss art scene, because she had been in Winterthur in the residency
Oh, at the Villa, yes.
Strelle, I think.
That's a beautiful residency.
Yes. So she had already been there, and then she was invited to Proger in the residency. Actually, after that, she went to Geneva to the Embassy of Foreign Artists again. So, and I'm here. So it just seemed like things are connecting us to Switzerland all of a sudden.
So when you left after that month, did you already have an idea that you would come back?
No. Actually, you know, I thought, you must be so lucky to be even in Zurich. Because I was thinking I would come back to Zurich, of course. I was thinking, it must be so many people that want to be there. But I didn't have a focus on this because I actually didn't mean to go somewhere else. I felt again connected to building this art space at home, creating kind of a sense of community for me and for us and for the team, and just I was really dedicated there. Also, maybe it's important to say that around that time I got my studio also. Around the time we opened Sandwich, I finally decided to make the effort and rent a space so I can do my work there. So when you have your own space, you also know you're connected to it. You really don't feel like going away. You want to make it nice there and to have your ideas happen, and it just feels so good. But so it's good that the residency happened now and not last year, for example, because now I felt that I am at a moment where I feel good with what I built so far. I need a nice break also for myself. I need to discover what other people are doing. This year we started also going to Berlin, maybe every three months, just to have a weekend there to visit things, get in contact with things. So now we are in the next kind of stage, you know. We already have something going on. It's not going on by itself, but it seems more, not easier, but more in the... like the wheels are in motion.
Yeah.
And me and my partners now feel like we can also go out, spread a bit, and get to know what other people are doing, thinking, and showing. So, yes, so this residency happened because I had a good connection with Esther from the beginning. We spent such a great evening together when I was in Zurich. We were introduced by a common friend, and
by
Katrin Hug. I knew Katrin very little, and I was staying with her so I could visit. She brought Esther along because she knew she's an interesting person, and so we had a great night. And then I was alone with Esther for a few hours going into... there were some art events, of course, that she knew about and she wanted to see, and she brought me along, and I already met some people in those few hours, and it was just this great energy, and then we kept in touch. So when the moment was right, she invited me in this program.
Yeah, good thing you came.
Yes. I mean, with this one, I would have never said no. So when she asked, I said, definitely, I'm in for the whole 3 months, and it's the right time to do this.
It used to be more important where you're born into, and I think now we have just so much more accessibility, mobility, and there's so much more exchange.
Yes, and I don't feel at all anymore like, oh, there's some problem, I'm from Romania, or I'm so bored of this complaining all the time and feeling like... and because it's not there. I mean, Romanian artists have always been out there, and there are all these people that we can, you know, in the past and also in contemporary ones that we can look up to and see that there isn't, you know, it's not like, it doesn't take a miracle or anything to be active and to travel and to do things. So I'm just so bored, and I hate when I hear these kind of thoughts that, oh yeah, but if I were from there, or... it just doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. And while you were here, that's also it's also an indication of how it works today. While you were here, you had a show in Bucharest. I think it's still going on.
Yes.
At Nicodim Gallery.
Yes.
Which is, I mean, you told me that. I didn't know. It's a gallery that is in the very close vicinity to Sandwich Gallery, but that is very different in character. That is a commercial gallery. And you're showing a work there that is called Small Accidents Cafe. And it is a large installation of very brightly colored objects / furniture. And I would like to talk to you a little bit about it, because they are, looking at photographs of these objects, you are in the world of, let's say, industrial design, product design. But at the same time, you are avoiding all the concerns that an industrial designer has to respect, such as practical concerns, cost. But then again, they seem very much, I mean, you at the same time, you do respect, for instance, the size of a human body that sits on a chair, a stool, by a table. So it looks impractical, but at the same time, perfectly practical as well. So what is your intention with these objects? And have you spoken to industrial designers when you conceived it?
Actually, you got it very well, this idea that it seemed at first that is like a designer's work, but actually it defies all the rules, I guess, because, yeah, you sleep from them, or they're a bit cold, they're moving, it's impossible to hold your drink on them, and there is this freedom that I have as an artist to do just anything, but in the same time make it look like a designer's work. And then maybe you appreciate a bit more when you sit on a table that works, where your drink doesn't slip, or when a chair is a bit more comfortable. So that's on one side. And another one is to have, again, this encounter between people who might use these tables or this moving bar in the same time, and they share a moment where things are maybe a bit awkward. It depends on how open they are. Maybe they just feel embarrassed if they fall, or you're not really falling anyway. It's really small accidents. But this moment when maybe they just look at each other and smile a bit, and maybe they continue to talk about it, or maybe they just, that's it. It doesn't have to be, you know, like a real relationship, but just an encounter. That's the most important part for me, when there's people on them. And I would like, of course, this cafe to get out of the gallery afterwards and to be maybe in a public space or on a terrace or on a real cafe, who knows, if the owner is more open to this experiment.
Is it weather resistant?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. It's. I think it mainly works outside. So this is the most important part. But when you also look at these objects in the gallery, like this one, which is definitely a white cube and a huge one, they are these beautiful abstract objects. This I discovered a bit later, a bit afterwards. I was so keen on the people's experience and this, and I thought this is not important how they look afterwards. Or before people are coming in. But now I also find value in this. And then they look like sculptures. So that's another thing I never planned or expected to do sculptures. But if you see them like this, you know, these beautiful colored objects, you could say it's a sculpture show.
Yeah. So no, they really, really it reminded me of the Le Folies of Bernard Tschumi, mm-hmm, in the Parc des Villettes in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
these structures that are kind of sculptures, kind of building structures, but then again, they're fully, they're just little mm-hmm. mad ideas, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so playful and fun. And I think it's very liberating to explore them, to be able to experience an object without a preset notion of, you know, it's like a stool and you just have to sit on it.
Mm-hmm. And
but no, there's other objects where you can find your own way of experiencing it.
Yes, and they have to remain simple. They still have to have humor. I will probably keep colors and, you know, find different color codes for the things. But now I am sketching and drawing a lot and always see shapes, even here in the city, shapes that I take literally and transform into something else. And I always see smaller objects that I imagine how they would look, you know, bigger, and with a person standing on them or sitting them on them. And I think now it's really going, it's really expanding in my mind for the next things I want to do. And
so do you make small scale models of these objects?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I try to also, and now another kind of ambition is to know materials and know techniques and actually know who to talk to for them to be created and for them to be made.
That's why you should go check out in St.
Yes.
Gallen the material archive at the Kunstgießerei.
Yes. Exactly, because now I know I don't have to make things on myself with my own hands, but I want to make a little network and a little black book of who can help me do something in metal and in resin and discover all these possibilities and not be afraid to make things bigger also. Actually, I did, you know, bigger things, but not to have this anxiousness about it anymore, because it's just as easily controllable as a small thing.
Yeah.
Maybe and even easier.
I mean, if you're planning on expanding to the public sphere, I mean, size is important. Mm-hmm. If something is not drawing the attention of the public, then it's maybe it doesn't serve its purpose.
Yes, exactly. And I can do this exercise really soon, actually, because next week I'm going to Innsbruck for 2 days to see the spaces there and come up with an idea for a work for public space. So this is what I will have to come up with.
Excellent.
Until June. Yes, I'll come
but
up with
But is it
something.
Like a pitch or do they ask you?
They chose
you?
Me, yes.
Okay.
But now I have to pitch the idea so we mm-hmm. can, you know, decide on it. And of course it has to have some connection with the space there, you know, there's different social implications depending on where we put it, but this will be a nice start in the public space area.
So I want to come back to the residency, Message Salon Embassy Zurich North. Your studio space is one room. And it's 2 stories high, but it's one room. And there is a mobile structure inside of it that allows you to have a second, like a gallery floor. And last week, you invited the public to attend an artist talk that had you on the podium alongside Marta Magnetti, who is a visual artist from Lugano. And you called this talk Altitude, and you said, I think I want to speak about how this room, that is a very, very special room, how this inspired you to do what you did in Zurich.
I think it will inspire me also in the future, in the next things that I will do, because every day I would go up the ladder to this first floor, maybe just to take something and come back and just to change how I saw my works on the wall, when I see them from above or when I see them from just frontal, made me think and see them differently. And I also started to work downstairs at this big table, and at kind of the middle of the time period, I changed and I moved all my stuff upstairs, and it really changed the way I worked. Not that I had maybe really different ideas, but maybe I was more concentrated and more focused, or focused in a different way or on different things. And there's another change because the windows are high up, and when you're downstairs, you can only kind of try to glimpse a bit of the, you know, the sky, and actually you see a lot, so there are big windows. It's not like a cellar, but you can't look directly frontal. When you're up there, you're at the same level as the windows, and this again changes a lot because I need light, I need this contact with the outside. And another contact that I felt like I need to do, because of the position of the windows, is to put these letters and write these messages for the outside, and another way to
just for the listeners, right? I'm just interrupting. You wrote, was passiert, wenn wir die Höhe ändern? Is that correct?
Yes. And also,
komm herein.
Yes. And come inside. So just a question, maybe nothing happens when you change the level. Maybe something very small happens, or not all the time. It's not only...
Well, you know, be careful. You're in Switzerland here. This is the country of the hikers.
Okay.
People swarm out every weekend to the mountains. So I would say, I mean, people would hear the Swiss, they would answer, yes, a lot happens if you change the altitude.
Yes.
But that's just...
And I like the idea that I call it change in altitude when it's such a small difference, is less than a floor maybe, but it's still considered technically a change in altitude. And maybe it's not only the way that you see things, because you can look from above and you have a different angle in your sight, in your view, but maybe also how you feel, knowing that underneath you is an empty space, or knowing that or making the effort to climb the stairs, and when you get there you have this effort in you, or the result of this effort.
It's a very essential part even of art, the change of perspective. And I think a lot of time that's exactly how visual art works. There is a change of perspective in terms of position. I mean, a lot of art plays with perspectives. And then there's the metaphorical change of perspective, of course, that will hopefully allow us to expand our horizon.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I have all these ideas to include this in some works, just something that makes you really go on top of something. And I love this kind of these tall chairs, for example, in the tennis referee,
yes,
or at the beach,
yes,
the beach guy. And you know, I think it's so cool how you can be
Baywatch.
Yes, how you know, you're above all and you can see, but maybe it can be a bigger place for more people, or I don't know. I'm always have this idea to see things a bit.
There's
from
also
above.
These chairs for hunters,
okay,
so they can also observe the animals.
Okay,
and I don't think they're allowed to actually hunt from up there, but it's like the watchtower.
Yes. Yeah, well, there is a tower with a slide at the Vitra Museum, which, by the famous artist, and obviously I tried it also down there. But and then we get to another idea of these slow slides. So I want to have a way also to go down from going up as a slide, but it scares me, the speed of the normal slides, so... That's another thing I want to find, the slowest slide possible. So going up on the stairs, but coming down on a really, really slow slope.
And do you want to work with the angle, or do you want to work with the friction?
With the angle.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm imagining these curves, but on a really slow, and then you have time to enjoy your change in level and your change in altitude a bit slower, because a normal slide, you just go
In three
seconds, you're down there and your heart's like this in your neck. And I just don't see the pleasure in that. So, you know, there's a lot to work on that also.
And what about speed? So are you afraid of speed as well? Or is it just the connection of change of altitude and speed?
Yes, I think it's also the speed that I don't like, because I like to take things slow, look around. Maybe you can have a conversation on the slides. You know, maybe it can be a completely different experience.
But do you have a driver's license?
Yes.
So, but you're a slow driver.
Yes, I'm, you know, safe and slow. And I just don't find, I don't see the pleasure. Maybe I'm, you know, just a boring, you know, not exciting enough. But I think a lot of things that are slow and just pleasant can be really more interesting as an experience.
So your stay in Zurich is almost finished and you're preparing the release of a zine that will be published through Esther's Messer Salon Embassy residency. I guess it's in production already. And I just spotted some pages and I've seen beautiful drawings. A series of drawings. Would you like to speak about your process? Maybe there's a connection to the very early stages of your art education, when you started to have drawing classes, and how is your drawing practice? How is that a part of your everyday practice or not?
It is a very important part now. And it's obviously a comeback to really the first lessons that I had in high school and for the admission in the design department. But I hated it then because there was a certain way to do things. Obviously, I had to do them just right. There was no freedom in it because we had a clear objective to do the exam. And after I did that, and after I went into photography and video, I never touched a pencil in that way anymore because I was, again, liberated from it. And then in 2012, I was at the Salzburg Summer Academy in a really nice class of the artist Christoph Schaefer. He's a German artist, and his class was called Drawing as Desiring Machine. And obviously it was very important to him, and he showed us, he didn't show us actually anything. He made these exercises and he was really casual and free and open about it. And then I discovered that you can sketch things that you would like to exist in the future. So you make a drawing and it's already the first step to make something happen. And because I am not so good with the writing theoretically, and I'm not very conceptual, maybe I'm a lot more practical and pragmatic, then I discovered this as the best tool and the perfect tool to explain my ideas, and not just to explain them, but to make them happen.
To envision them.
And to envision also. Them, mm-hmm. And to envision things and objects. But if I wouldn't have had these skills from the first lessons, I wouldn't be able to draw something in kind of perspective or as a volume or where the shade is and what the width or length is. Obviously now I feel no restraint in making them perfectly or straight, but obviously it is a good skill that I learned a long time ago. And in the last few years I also started to draw the silhouettes and the shapes of people that would actually use the objects or the environments that I would create. And at first I see these people that I drew 3 years ago for a cafe setting, another cafe, and they are so weird, you know, you could tell that they were not really natural, and you know, they have these weird proportions or positions. But then I started to concentrate also a bit more on the people that on the drawings of people. And now they're also a thing on their own. Very simple, but I discovered that they can be very expressive. And they are a tool to explain what I want to build, but also now I make these bigger drawings that I would just show as what they are, even if the actual thing is not constructed in the end, or who knows. But to also show this part of what I imagine to create in the future.
Yeah. But, I mean, the figures are very stylized.
Yes, and I am also, I think I'm not trained or able to draw these people as actual people. So I found my own way, and it's another thing is that I don't want to spend too much time on them. I don't want it to become a thing and a skill to develop. It's just enough that I can explain how that person maybe feels or what is the position that they have in the swimming pool or in the bench that I want them to sit on, and I can kind of make a face that is a bit expressive, and I think I have maybe 3 or 4 expressions that I can make with just a few points or lines, and I think these are the tools that I need and I can use now, and it's enough. So, you know, I'm not going to go into drawing for drawing. It's always drawing for building, let's say, drawing for constructing something else.
It's funny because, I mean, you said it allows you to finish a drawing rather quickly. And earlier we were talking about speed and slowing down. So that's something you like to do fast.
Yeah, that's another thing that I can never be in one of these kind of meticulous, really slow for days, for weeks projects. It's really not me, and I have so much respect for people that can be devoted to something like that. But with me, it has to go, you know, the ideas have to go a bit faster. Otherwise, I can't say I get bored, but maybe I lose interest. But the experience itself, the experience that I want to create for the people and for me, that is a slower thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the allure of the figures is, to me at least, is that you set down the pencil once, and then you don't lift it up again. You just set it down once, and then you complete the figure.
That's kind of it. But I think of the position of the person first, and I kind of have it in my mind. And of course, maybe the first time doesn't work, or it has a weird back or a too big leg. And you know, I don't want them to be too disproportioned, or I don't want them to be too awkward and weird. So then I work again on a new one. But it has to go fast. If I go slow, then the line is not beautiful, and you can feel there's something wrong with it. And of course, I did this also, so all these things I learned from.
And what's your favorite pen?
This black black like
ink
zero
pen?
Fine.
Oh,
05 mine. Like I think. You know, the one that you do for technical drawing,
yes.
Think. And then there is this big markers like this, maybe 2 centimeters square ones that you do these nice big lines. And this is for bigger papers. But obviously when all the time when you draw something with black, it just feels good. And if I do something with a pencil, with a graphite pencil, it never works. I don't feel it at all. I don't feel the connection with the paper, maybe, or you know, I don't want it to be too metaphysical, but I just don't enjoy it. So it has to be an ink or a color, and obviously after that neon colors, and the neon colors appear in the zine also. And there's another thing about the zine, that besides the drawings, there are some photographies. So now we come back. I came back after all this break from 8 years to do some film photos, just snapshots, I would call them, of the places around here, some industrial environment in Oerlikon, train tracks, things, cranes, things like that. And they are also in the zine together with drawings. I think it's a good contrast. And for me, it's an amazing rediscovery to see that actually I'm able to take photos on a film camera again, which is not automatic. And so I still have something there in me from all those years.
What is it called?
Brain Fog, For or Against. And it's and mix of things.
And for the listeners, if they are interested in seeing that scene or getting it or buying it, how do they go about?
So there's a lunch on Friday on the 13th from 5 in Oerlikon in our studio, and then after that they would contact Esther to get to the scene.
Excellent. And also, a last thing, do you want to say your web address, your website?
It's danielapalimariu.ro from Romania. And the website of Sandwich, where you can see everything we did so far, is sandwichgallery.ro.
Check it out.
Yes.
So thank you so much for taking the time and coming here, for being so open.
It was a pleasure to go over these things.
Thank you.